We live in a world rife with violence and despair. Daily reports of senseless drive-by shootings, citizens gone berserk, insensibility to the homeless and to the sick all shake our souls into despondency. Last month, I was talking to a friend, Mary, who is a black evangelical street pastor from East Oakland. Her ministry covers the area near Fruitvale Station, where a BART policeman murdered Oscar Grant. She herself lost a son to a drive-by shooting, and Mary was complaining that it's difficult to get folks on the street to turn to God. So many have witnessed friends and children and family members killed by violence. You ask, why doesn't God intervene at these unfathomable horrors and stop them? Where is God? Now, talking to Mary, this kind of unusual thought I'm prone to unusual thoughts from time to time, occurred to me when I heard about their incredulity toward God. I spurted out, maybe God has PTSD from witnessing all that violence on the streets. So that's the way my mind works. My friend Mary responded, that's deep. Maybe God is sad. As I reflected on our conversation, I'm getting increasingly convinced that God has PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, stay with me, humanist and atheist and Buddhist. Please use the kind of metaphoric parts of the mind when you hear the word God. I'm not a particular fan of the literal term God to denote a personal and all-powerful, all-knowing being removed from the world that can intervene by suspending natural law. That's not where I'm coming from. God, as I use it here, could be anything from such a personal deity to the communal spirit of humankind, or even to Gaia, the collective ecosystem of the earth. A purely intellectual debate over the existence of God loses the profound emotional and transformative capacity that a metaphoric understanding of God possesses. Suspend judgment and bear me out. As I blurted, maybe God, the earth, or our collective humanity is traumatized by random, senseless killings. Maybe then the goddess of Oaktown or the human community living in Oakland is paralyzed by those killings. But exactly what is PTSD and how can we ascribe such an emotional state to God? So the mental health community from where I come defines it as an anxiety disorder resulting from exposure to an event that induces horror and dread and helplessness among those witnessing it. You can either be a victim of the violence or a viewer of it. When you're a viewer of senseless violence, you can suffer from trauma through your sense of survivor guilt. It happened to them. Why couldn't I stop it? Why am I still alive? And they're gone. Some of the key symptoms in PTSD are avoidance of social situations. People just don't want to talk to another human being under those circumstances. People feel numb, indifferent to their own or others' pain and suffering. You can also have recurrent fears and sadness and flashbacks and nightmares. Like the vets returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, women and men who are victims of sexual assault, and those witnessing street violence in the inner city or in Baghdad, or touched by the devastation of Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines. Maybe, just maybe, God feels survivor guilt and withdraws her or his will from intervening in human events on account of despair. Now, this idea that God has PTSD harkens back to the ancient Near East, the Mesopotamia. In the Mesopotamian lament for the city of Ur, the goddess Ningal weeps for the ghostly desolation that's befallen her beloved city through wars and storms. She's tearful and sad. And like my friend's god, she mourns over the unspeakable devastation and loss of children and orphans and others in her city. Ningal recounts her pleading with the council of gods. I verily clasped my legs, laid hold of my arms. Truly, I shed my tears before On. Truly, I made supplication before the god Enlil. May my city not be ravaged, I said to them. May Ur not be ravaged. Now, if God were in principle all-powerful, then she or he could, of course, intervene. If God were empathic, then she would cry over the incomprehensible pain and loss. I choose empathy over power, loving awareness over detached principles. A traumatized God is preferable to an indifferent deity if we are created in the image of the divine. This kind of quirky twist on the problem of evil and violence and sadness in the world assumes that God's the present witness to the earth. Theologians like Sally McFaig posit that the universe could be viewed as the body of God, and that rich metaphoric descriptions of the divine, such as God as mother or friend or healer, are paths leading away from theological fundamentalism and away from the overly simplistic idea of God as the all-powerful Father. If the world is God's body and her body is assaulted by violence and pollution and neglect, it would seem natural that she should develop post-traumatic stress disorder. One thing that makes it difficult for us to understand how God or the spirit of humankind could have feelings is that we Unitarian Universalists are so frequently in our heads and so drawn to the rational that we often fail to recognize that metaphorical thinking can enrich our lives and further our understanding of grief and sorrow and anger. So I had a dream last night as I was preparing this sermon, middle of the night, that kind of emblazoned on me the possibility of how emotions can further, you know, our understanding. So in my dream, I was driving back from East Oakland, where I work on Wednesdays at a community crisis clinic as a psychiatrist. And I was driving back, coming along 880, speeding to try to get home. Although in the dream, I wasn't going home. I was going to a party reception that my parents were having in a large home in North Palo Alto. Very unusual. North Palo Alto, as you may know, is like this wealthy area of Palo Alto, not a place my parents would be present in. But anyway, they were having a party. They had a great, lavish party, and they were celebrating an opening of an African-American play. Now, as I approached the large mansion, this very surreal thing happened in my dream. There was a baby on the top of my hood, a little white European-American baby that all of a sudden appeared and then fell off, and I ran over the child. And I was just, it became a nightmare at that point in the dream. And I ran up to the mansion, and I opened the door and asked my parents, I got to call someone, I got to call the police. And we couldn't find the number for the Palo Alto police, but eventually through 911, we got a hold of a cop. And, you know, many of us are afraid of cops. And, you know, I sort of shakily and tearfully described the event. And the Palo Alto cop was quite friendly. And after getting my report, he asked me if talking or giving the report arose any feelings up about race. I said, yeah, I feel like I'm in the novel To Kill a Mockingbird, that I'll be accused of deliberately killing the baby. And then I woke up, ran to my computer, and wrote mistakes. Inspiration comes in the oddest times. So as I think back about it, the intensity of the dream was a direct consequence of the Beloved Conversations retreat that a group of us, Darcy and Katie, I, and several members of the congregation who are here today, participated in last weekend. Mark Hicks is a UU religious educator from Chicago, coordinated the retreat, and he encouraged us to express feelings about race, whether they're sadness or anger or any kind of emotion, and to feel safe in the environment of the retreat to voice these emotions. Now, all of us who were there have been profoundly influenced by the emotions that, in fact, did stir up that weekend. I think, then, that the dream suggests a cultural nightmare, a collective post-traumatic stress in which we all participate. Taking place in a car, driving by in alignment with death somehow, and the wealth in Palo Alto contrasted with the poverty of Fruitvale Avenue in East Oakland. These are all symbols of the emotional facts that seep into our unconscious. Now, for those of us with a poetic bent, Joyce's rendition of Emily Dickinson's poem, There's a Certain Slant of Light, draws us into her wonderful images of the dark light of winter that sinks down on us, that oppresses us like tunes from a Gothic cathedral. And she ascribes in the last stanza this deeply oppressive feeling to nature herself. She says that when it comes, the landscape listens. Shadows hold their breath, and when it goes, it's like the distance on the look of death. So the world itself responds and resonates with Dickinson's heavy heart through listening and holding its breath. Nature is ripe with feeling. Thus, if it's hard for us to accept that the goddess of Oakland could be suffering from PTSD and that she's riveted with paralysis and fear and avoidance on account of the wretched violence witnessed there, perhaps we can more easily swallow the notion that nature, in a metaphoric sense and through imagery, feels the heavy feelings that we experience. So we could even say that nature herself suffers from PTSD. Now, if nature or the God of Oakland or the common spirit of Alameda County could be suffering from such feelings, the opposite feelings of joy and enthusiasm could be uplifted as part of the recovery from post-traumatic stress. Treating PTSD is difficult. It's a long road to recovery that involves reimagining the awful events to which you were exposed consolidating empathic relationships in family or in community, and turning toward a hopeful future. A dual recognition of the past trauma, as well as reorganizing your vision of the future. Selection from the Gospel of Luke is such a turning from despair to future hope and love. In the selection read, Jesus descends from the Mount of Olives into Jerusalem with the throngs praising him and God. So in Christian churches, you may have all seen some of this on Palm Sunday. Oftentimes there's a processional where people, kids usually bring in palms and an image of the God or Jesus or so on is brought in to celebrate Palm Sunday. Now, the Pharisees asked Jesus to quell the emotional outburst. So, I mean, we're kind of like Pharisees, aren't we? That we don't favor emotional outbursts. But Jesus responds with the words, "I tell you, if these were silent, the stones would shout out." So there's a spirit that engages not only people and humanity, but the stones, the flowers, the earth, the trees, that express the joy and the optimism felt at that moment in the Jesus narrative. So grant me this, whether we view God, Goddess, Spirit of Life, the collective love of humanity is suffering from frozen despair over violence and senseless loss, let us recognize our collective suffering, our feelings of helplessness and numbed avoidance, and turn restraint into action, fear into boldness, isolation into relationship, and sorrow into hopeful love and joy. Amen and blessed be.